我们下次节目再会。
白宫表示将继续关注中国人权问题。美海军驱逐舰在南中国海进行航行自由行动。脸书监督委员会将决定是否恢复特朗普账号。2月18号星期四，欢迎收看美国观察，我是卡拉。美国总统拜登星期三晚上参加了 CNN 主办的市民大会，他在回答问题时评论了中国国家主席习近平统治中国的做法，并说他与习近平通话的时候提到香港、维吾尔人、台湾等议题。拜登说中国要为侵犯人权承担后果。白宫在2月17号重申，拜登政府与中国接触时将持续坚持人权议题。详细情况请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅来介绍。耀毅。
这美国总统拜登呢，在美国时间的2月16号晚上前往这个威斯康星州的密尔瓦基市参加由 CNN 来主办的市民大会。那么这个市民大会原本的重点的主题是要谈论这个新冠病毒的疫情跟拜登政府如何来因应新冠疫情。不过呢，在节目当中主持人这个库珀也问了说他上个星期呢，拜登总统跟习近平中国国家主席习近平通了电话，两个人谈话的内容大概是怎么样。那么对此呢，拜登则是表示说他在担任副总统这几年呢，中国国家主席习近平当时那个时候是这个中国国家的副主席，胡锦涛呢是中国国家主席，所以呢两位副手当时在有很多的接触，所以呢他非常的了解习近平的想法。那拜登呢，他在这个 CNN 的市民大会当中谈到的习近平的对话当中呢，他表示说他有告诉习近平说我们必须要声扬人权，因为这是我们美国的本质。那他也说呢，习近平的中心原则是必须要有一个统一的紧密控制的中国，而所有他做的事情都基于这样的理念。那么拜登说他向习近平指出，美国总统必须反映美国价值观，不然就不能够继续当美国总统。而所谓呢，这个要拜登在香，他这个习近平在香港做的事情不去公开指明，还有在中国西部对维吾尔人做的事情，以及习近平对台湾做的事情，还有试图要强制终结一个中国政策呢，拜登说他当然都会公开指明。拜登说呢，他这样子告诉习近平，而习近平也说他了解这一点。拜登接着表示呢，中国将要承担后果，而习近平知道。他说的是呢，让双方都清楚。两方将会继续重申美国在联合国以及其他地方作为人权发言人的角色。拜登也说呢，中国现在很努力要想要成为世界领导人，要获得那个头衔。而为了达成那个目标呢，中国必须要获得其他国家的信任，而只要他们继续从事违反基本人权的行为，就很难能够达到那个目标。那拜登总统也在 CNN 的市民大会表示呢，美中关系呢十分的复杂，他没有办法在十分钟之内在电视上能够说明的清楚。那我们知道拜登总统讲到的一个一中政策，那美国的一中政策与中国的一中原则其实是不大相同的。中国所说的一中原则认为台湾是中国领土不可分割的一部分，不过美国的一中政策既没有这样说，而且呢也表示美国会遵守台湾关系法还有六项保证。那么在2月17号的白宫新闻简报会上呢，白宫发言人沙奇被问到了这个拜登总统在前一晚的发言，对此呢，沙奇则表示重申了拜登总统以及拜登政府对人权的坚持。我们看一下白宫发言人沙奇今天怎么说。
Of his comments was also about how during his conversation with President Xi, he talked about the values of the United States and that.The fact is that even when you are communicating with another world leader and you're having a tough conversation, we can't, our values and our priorities, whether it's human rights as it relates to the Uyghurs and what they have suffered through, or the freedom of press or media, they can't take a back seat. And so the context of his comments were that those are issues he's going to continue to raise.
那么关于这个拜登政府要怎么样让中国来承担侵犯人权的责任，以及之前特朗普政府对中国企业施加的一些限制与禁令，是否拜登政府会继续下去？白宫发言人沙奇表示呢，现在美中的关系还在经由整个政府的跨部会的审议，等到审议结果出来之后呢，就会公布出来。卡拉，
好的，感谢姚毅发自白宫的报道。美国国务卿布林肯计划周四同日本、澳大利亚和印度的外交部长举行视频会晤。美国与这三个国家曾于2007年建立四边安全对话机制，又被称为四方联盟，旨在遏制中国在印太地区日益增长的影响力。美国国务院发言人普莱斯表示，这次谈话将推动自由开放的印太地区，并讨论新冠疫情和气候变化议题。此外，布林肯周三对联合国安理会表示，美国本月将向世卫组织支付会费，但也表示未来将致力于改革该机构。白宫安全顾问沙利文上周末就世卫组织针对中国新冠疫情调查的独立性表示了关切。
At the same time, we know there are areas for reform, and this is something that the State Department is prioritizing. We're working very closely with our partners in the interagency to identify ways we can strengthen this institution, something that is manifestly in our interests and also the interests of our partners and allies, but also the WHO itself.
美国国务卿布林肯星期三在联合国安理会会议上表示，美国将再次成为全球卫生领导者。美国相信多边主义、联合国和世界卫生组织不仅在回应这次新冠病毒带来的健康和人道主义问题上至关重要，更在建立全球未来应对类似危机的更强大的能力。美国将在本月底前向世界卫生组织支付$2亿会费，再次履行美国对世卫组织的承诺。布林肯说，应对新冠和未来可能出现的大流行病需要国际合作，所有国家都必须提供新冠爆发初期的所有数据。
And countries must be held accountable for upholding their human rights obligations. No country should be allowed to use COVID-19 as an excuse to violate human rights or fundamental freedoms. We also call for all countries to combat misinformation on vaccines. If we don'tWe seriously jeopardize our mission. Even as we expand access to safe and effective vaccines, we know that COVID-19 outbreaks are likely to occur in the years to come. The ongoing expert investigation about the origins of this pandemic and the report that will be issued must be independent, with findings based on science and facts, and free from interference. To better understand this pandemic and prepare for the next one, all countries...must make available all data from the earliest days of any outbreak. And going forward...
美国众议院四位共和党人星期三致信拜登总统，敦促他采纳特朗普政府提出的旨在加强限制中国孔子学院的政策提案。他们说，孔子学院表面上是促进两国的文化和语言项目，但实际上会危及美国校园的学术自由，要求协议安排受中共制定的法律约束，代表中共审查信息，给学院管理人员造成利益冲突。议员们在信中说，他们愿与拜登政府合作，制定两党的和全政府的解决方案，应对中共对美国教育和学术完整性构成的威胁。美国海军一艘驱逐舰在南中国海实施了一次航行自由行动。伯克级驱逐舰拉塞尔号星期三在斯普拉特里群岛，也就是中国所说的南沙群岛，实施了这次航行自由行动，以此捍卫国际法所赋予的海洋权利、自由以及合法使用。2月5日，美军麦凯恩号导弹驱逐舰进入南中国海主权有争议水域帕拉塞尔群岛，也就是中国所说的西沙群岛附近，实施了一次航行自由行动。那是拜登政府上台以来美国的首次相关行动。中国反对美军在南中国海实施航行自由行动。新加坡智库东南亚问题研究所的一项年度调查显示，如果东南亚国家在美中两国之间选边站队，大多数受访者表示会支持美国而不是中国。2021年东南亚态势调查报告显示，来自东盟10个成员国的1032名受访者中，有约 61.5% 的人表示会选择美国， 38.5% 选择中国。一年前的调查中，这项数字是 54% 对 46%。 调查还发现，东南亚地区对美国的信任程度从去年的 30.3% 提升到今年的 48.3%。报告分析说，新任拜登政府的前景可能提升了东南亚地区对美国的支持。美国国会参议院在上个星期针对前总统特朗普的弹劾审判中宣判他无罪，但是特朗普面临的法律问题并未因此结束。一位民主党籍联邦众议员日前向法庭提出诉讼，从不同角度指控特朗普在冲击国会事件中扮演的角色。来看报道。
密西西比州联邦众议员本尼·汤普森日前在华盛顿一家法庭提出诉讼，他指控前总统特朗普和律师朱利安尼以及极端主义团体试图阻止国会认证2020年总统选举结果。分析人士预计，此后可能还会有更多针对特朗普在冲击国会事件中扮演角色的指控。
I think it's safe to assume that there are going to be lawsuits, that are going to be naming Donald Trump related to the riot itself.
今年1月6日，一批质疑去年大选结果的特朗普支持者强行闯入国会大厦。这次事件造成多人伤亡，并一度中断了国会对选举结果的认证。上个星期，在美国国会参议院就特朗普是否煽动暴乱的弹劾审判中，参议员们以57票对43票的投票结果认定特朗普无罪。但是，分析人士指出，特朗普面临的新的指控基于不同的角度。
What it actually alleges is that Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani and two different extremist groups had conspired together to violate a Reconstruction era law known as the Ku Klux Klan Act, which prohibits the use of force or intimidation to prevent Congress or other federal officials from carrying out their duties.
此外，卸任后的特朗普总统还面临其他法律纠纷，其中包括被控在去年大选后向佐治亚州的选举官员施加压力，以及在曼哈顿涉及封口费和商业交易等指控。与此同时，特朗普星期二发表声明，对参议院共和党领袖麦康奈尔提出批评，并呼吁共和党议员罢免麦康奈尔的领袖职务。稍早，麦康奈尔曾经公开表示，尽管特朗普在弹劾审判中被宣布无罪，但是他对冲击国会事件负有实际上和道义上的责任。美国之音电视新闻。
联邦参议院刚结束了对前总统特朗普的弹劾审判，而特朗普还面临着另一项裁决，即脸书的监督委员会的判决。该委员会将裁定这家互联网公司将前总统特朗普在脸书和 Instagram 无限期封禁的决定是否正确。
前总统特朗普面临美国参议院的弹劾审判时，他还面临着另一类的法院，即脸书的监督委员会的判决。该委员会将裁定这家互联网公司将前总统在脸书和 Instagram 无限期封禁的决定是否正确。
In a way, it's an experiment, and I think many people believe that this is the way forward, because the alternative is, I think, for the government to be making the rules, or Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg to making those decisions.
印度尼西亚记者巴尼是监督委员会20名成员之一。
We take into account, of course, Facebook's standards, Facebook values, and international human rights laws.
委员会成员最近发布了他们的第一批裁决，在5个案例中有4个推翻了脸书删除内容的决定，而脸书也遵循委员会的决定恢复了这些帖子。在特朗普出现在1月6号的集会之后，脸书将其禁止特朗普的决定提交委员会审议，并要求对应如何处理世界领导人的言论做出评论。有些人质疑委员会本身的合理性。
This is sort of like Walmart, you know, or Aston Martin or Jaguar or something, deciding to have a court, right? Which is really very strange.
爱德华兹说，这个社交媒体巨人的行为有如以一个拥有自己法院结构的主权国家自居。
The more people discuss what the board does,the less they discuss whether there should be a board at all.
其他人则指责政府法规缺席，让科技公司得以轻易取代。
It doesn't solve the structural problems of the business models, of the algorithmic amplification of hatred that I think have to be addressed.
委员会成员巴尼说，目标并不是取代政府法规。
We don't see ourselves as a substitute to the laws, in the different countries, you know, that's for them to decide. But we are here to help in content moderation.
委员会收集了公众对脸书封禁特朗普账号的评论之后，将尽快做出决定。美国之音郑丽娜，纽约报道。
脸书的独立监督委员会尚未对是否恢复特朗普的账号做出决定，而推特已经决定永久封禁特朗普的账号。3周前，推特表示将推出 Birdwatch 新功能，允许用户对误导性信息进行审核，目前正在试用阶段。而在华盛顿，国会两党也都提出了废除230条款，停止保护社媒平台对用户言论免责。在社交媒体时代，如何保护言论自由，如何应对误导性信息，今天3位法律、民权、网络领域的专家对这个问题进行解读。1月6日，美国国会大厦被特朗普支持者闯入后，社交媒体公司推特宣布永久封禁特朗普。特朗普4年里发出36000多条推特，拥有8800万关注者。他曾在推特上公布政策、开除官员，也直白地表达对某些人物和事件的个人喜恶。推特封杀特朗普引起了有关言论自由、内容监管等问题的讨论。今天3位美国法律、民权、网络行为方面的专家一同探讨社交媒体时代的言论自由。
To note that as a legal matter under U.S. constitutional law, Twitter's banning Trump does not violate the First Amendment. I think that it did the right thing at the beginning, taking intermediate steps. So not taking the tweets down, but flagging them and giving other information, because some of his tweets were violating Twitter's rules against misinformation about the election and the electoral process. In terms of, you know, whether I think it's a good idea, I think Twitter may well be justified and its decision reasonable in light of the extraordinary events of January 6th at the Capitol.
Yeah, I am not a believer that individuals should be banned and censored in that kind of way, unless they do something absolutely outrageous that that nobody else happens to be doing on the platform. Because if you start selecting out some people to be banned and others not to be banned, the question arises, you're either going to remove everybody who's saying anything, which in which case, why even have a platform? Or you unfortunately, you just have to let these things go.
Now, the problem with Section 230 is, at least the way that the courts have interpreted it, it's been read for these platforms to essentially do whatever they want, engage in as much reckless practice as they want in order to increase engagement or to get profits and not have to worry about any kind of liability or negative consequences that may result. And that's really unusual because we normally expect that, let's, for instance, think of a brick-and-mortar business or a newspaper or really any intermediary we can think of that's not an internet intermediary would have some responsibility for at least some of the harms that are very predictable and foreseeable and that a company could easily do something about. And so right now, we need to switch over that kind of immunity that the tech industry has and make it a little bit more like what every other business offline would have to contend with, and to think about and anticipate the kinds of harms or the kinds of injuries that could result from reckless practices.
I think if there were an attempt to make that into a law, a federal law, that it would almost certainly be struck down by the Supreme Court. And that is because of this longstanding view that companies like Facebook and Twitter have their own First Amendment rights to decide which speech they want to carry or not. So Facebook could come and say, you can't, as the government, require us to carry the accounts of people who we think have violated our rules because we don't, you know, so we don't want to carry their speech. And I think that they would probably win on that in court. And I also think it's probably would be a bad idea for the government to try to regulate. It's also hard to see how they could implement rules that say you can only ban this but not that. It just seems like a big mess.
I don't think you want governments going in there and doing this, because then, well, even if they do it well, there'll be the natural opposition to saying this is government control. Social media don't really have the job of correcting people and behaving like a news media source. They're providing spaces where humans can get together in a virtual world and talk and associate around interests that they have and buy things and sell things. That's really why they're there. So there is a meaningful engagement, again, as to, well, how might the algorithms be modified to give them a more balanced view? But the trouble is that that's almost asking a social media company, which is a business, in the end, it's a business, it's asking it to be a social engineer. So I think much more the debate is how are platforms going to engage with, given that they have community, given that they promote groups, after all, that's what they do, they promote communities. So how are we as society going to deal with the fact that there are meaningful communities online? And what are we going to, you know, what are the rules of engagement socially, not legally, but socially?
1月6日，美国国会大厦被特朗普支持者闯入后，社交媒体公司推特宣布永久封禁特朗普。推特封杀特朗普的决定引起了有关言论自由、内容监管等问题的讨论。今天我们邀请三位嘉宾，奈特第一修正案研究所律师凯蒂·法洛，乔治华盛顿大学物理学教授尼尔·约翰逊，迈阿密大学法学院教授玛丽安·弗兰克斯，一同讨论社交媒体时代的言论自由。
Of course, there are going to be then consequences, just as you, if you ban someone from driving on a certain road at a certain speed, they'll use another road.
Right.
They'll go somewhere else. They'll find another solution. They won't suddenly think, oh, you're right. I shouldn't be saying those things. I'm going to stop.Unfortunately, the closest analogy that I can think of is the problem of having bugs infestation in your yard. If the solution is not just to take care of the largest yard in the neighborhood, because all the bugs will just go to neighboring yards. And online, every yard is a neighbor of another yard.And so you're just going to have this problem of just pushing the problem into other platforms.
And in the case of Trump, even when his account was suspended, he still had the ability to get his message out through, you know, he's the president of the United States. He could have plenty of media attention on television. He has other outlets. I'm more concerned from a free speech perspective about people who have less power being deplatformed and having no other, you know, real ability to get their message out.
Anybody who is trying to argue that platforms need to have equal sides for certain topics or that they need to amplify certain speech even if they don't want to, that completely violates the principle of the First Amendment itself because...These are companies that are private entities that have their own rights of free speech, which include, of course, the right not to speak and the right not to host certain types of content and the right not to have their property used in a way that they find objectionable. So we need to really ignore and really, I think, repudiate those kinds of ideas that are actually advocating in some ways for more suppression of speech and for some really directed governmental control of speech. We need to reject all of that.
I think it's much more important and much harder, but much more important to look at the communities that of people who believe the same thing as the person who's speaking. The person who's speaking, tweeting, may be the most famous, may be the one that everybody notices, but they are in a community of some kind. And that is the community, like the bugs in the yard. You would never contract a company that just goes around stamping on each one of the bugs one at a time. You really have to understand where they're forming a nest, how their access points are. Why is it that they're attracted into your yard and not the neighbor's? What is it about your yard? What really needs to be understood is what's going on in the communities and how are they talking? What questions are they asking? What are they talking about?Who are they also connected to? And the idea is not to then remove them, but to somehow understand why they're there. Unfortunately, it's kind of a society issue. So I could imagine community groups working with online communities that are closest to their interest in some mix of real world and online mediation.
Well, I think I'm encouraged by some of the steps that some of the private companies are taking to try and implement transparent policies and rules that explain to people what their rules are and trying to set up a system that operates as kind of like a quasi-judicial forum for assessing whether, for instance, a particular account should be left up or not. So, for instance, Facebook has established this thing called the Oversight Board, where if it determines that it's going to take down or take a negative action against an account, that person can refer, or I don't know who refers it, but basically can be reviewed by this Oversight Board, which is compiled of people who have a lot of expertise and international expertise in speech.I think the other way would be to encourage diversity and more options for social media platforms. You know, you could have, you know, platforms started by a nonprofit or, but, you know, that's hard to do, of course, scaling it up technically. But if it could be done, I think that would be helpful. But even those who are happy about the fact that these platforms are finally putting in some regulations should be concerned about the fact that this is completely dependent upon these companies' feelings at the time, and that they could just as soon roll them back and they can change them at any point. And so if we are really concerned about the role that social media platforms play in this kind of violence and disorder, there's going to need to be some actual legislative reform that is something that puts in place a permanent structure or permanent incentives for these companies to do the right thing.
感谢您收看今天的美国观察，我们下次再见。